Investing should be easy, right? For most people, though, the process of investing can be daunting. And savvy investing? Impossible. Here at Alliant Retirement and Investment Services, we don't think it should be that way. So we asked two of our financial consultants, Christian Chapluha and Tom Davia, to share their advice with you. They're here to walk us through the fundamentals of investing so we can make informed and better decisions with our money and what we need to do to prepare for the road ahead.
Welcome, everyone, to our Invest Savvy podcast here at Alliant Retirement and Investment Services. I'm your host, Christian Chapluha, and we are joined today by our special guest, Lawrence Gillum. He is Chief Fixed Income Strategist at LPL Financial and a senior member of their research team shaping LPL's viewpoint on fixed income and bond markets, including government and municipal securities. He's also a member of the Strategic Asset and Allocation Committee. Lawrence graduated with an MBA Corporate Finance and Data Analytics, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, also with an undergraduate degree in Business Administration from the University of Florida. He also holds the Chartered Financial Analyst CFA designation. LPL is the broker-dealer for Alliant Retirement and Investment Services, providing back-office operational support. LPL's research team manages over $60 billion in assets and 50 model portfolios. So thank you so much, Lawrence, for joining us today. We're eager to hear your perspective on interest rates, which have been such an important topic in capital markets for the last 2 years. To begin the discussion, please tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and role at LPL Research.
For sure. First of all, Christian, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share LPL Research's views. It has been a pretty exciting time in the markets over the last couple of years, and a lot of that excitement certainly has been in the fixed income markets. So a little bit about me. I joined LPL 3 years ago, but prior to that, I was with a regional brokerage firm down in Tampa where I headed up the fixed income research for the asset allocation department as well as the manager research department. So I've been looking at fixed income markets for over 20 years. And as mentioned, the last couple of years have been some of the most volatile years that I've ever experienced in my career. We do think that hopefully we're past a lot of that volatility, which I'm sure we'll get into in just a second, but it's definitely been exciting times. At LPL, my job as Chief Fixed Income Strategist, as you mentioned, I wear a couple different hats. First of all, I help guide fixed income views within our model asset allocation portfolios. We have about $60 billion of client assets that we oversee. My role on that Strategic and Tactical Asset Allocation Committee, firstly, is to provide fixed income guidance for those multi-asset portfolios. Where do we want interest rate exposure? Do we want credit exposure? Do we want U.S. versus non-U.S., et cetera? So a lot of those decisions come from me as it relates to the fixed income oversight of those portfolios. My other job here at LPL as the Chief Fixed Income Strategist, we have over 22,000 advisors here at LPL. And now that rates have moved higher, fixed income is cool again. So there's a lot of advisors out there that really haven't dealt with a lot of fixed income exposure within client assets. So my role is to help answer questions, provide educational events, and work with clients and advisors to help understand the fixed income climate and to help build out these fixed income portfolios, because we are seeing fixed income as an attractive opportunity again within the capital markets.
Well, I love this idea that fixed income is cool again. I was in the fixed income world as a research analyst a long time ago. So just seeing it come back, seeing inflation come back as a topic is really exciting for me as well.
Now, I may be the only one saying that it's cool again, but nonetheless.
Well, it's the two of us, so we can join in that idea. So we hear a lot about the Federal Reserve and Federal Reserve meetings in the news and interest rate policy. Tell us a little bit about how the Fed works. How do Fed decisions impact consumers? Just high level, 30,000 feet.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve has been the big story within most capital markets over the last couple of years. The Federal Reserve is in charge of the Fed funds rate, which is their policy tool. The Fed adjusts that Fed funds rate to either slow or speed up the economy when the economy is either not growing fast enough or potentially growing too fast. So their primary policy tool is to adjust interest rates. And certainly that does feed into the real economy and has direct impact on consumers, both directly and indirectly. Directly, as mentioned, the Fed is in charge of adjusting its policy rate, Fed funds rate. which is the overnight lending rate that banks lend to each other. So it's really the base rates. A lot of other short-term variable rate loans are priced off of. So as the Fed has increased rates by over 5% over the course of the last couple of years, a lot of these variable rates have increased as well and has made borrowing a little bit more cost prohibitive. The other influence that it has on consumers and the other side of that coin there is that it makes things like cash and cash-like investments more attractive. So again, one of the reasons why the Fed will adjust its policy rate is either to slow or to speed up the economy. When the Fed raises rates to these levels, consumers have a decision. They can either invest their current money in a money market fund, for example, that's yielding 5.5%, or they can borrow at these higher rates. There's close to $6 trillion in money market funds that are, you know, earning decent yields right now. So the Fed does have direct influence over the spending as well as the saving decisions for a lot of consumers out there. Now, indirectly, they also control the other interest rates on the U.S. Treasury yield curve that have a more direct impact on consumer loans. For example, indirectly, the Fed can influence the direction of, call it 10-year Treasury yields, which are a direct input into the pricing of mortgage rates. So as the 10-year Treasury yield, for example, has increased over the last couple of years alongside the aggressive Fed rate hiking campaign, mortgage rates have gone up as well. So certainly the Fed is front and center in terms of a lot of the consumer borrowing decisions, as well as those consumer saving decisions.
Well, I find it so interesting, this double-sided coin, because we hear a lot about increased borrowing rates, but on the flip side, giving investors and savers a chance to get a higher yield for the first time in a long time to kind of manage their financial goals and getting those higher savings account rates, CD rates, fixed income opportunities. I think that's really interesting. It is the flip side. When we talk about the yield curve, that's something that I find very interesting because there is this term structure. And, you know, we've got short-term interest rates, two-year interest rates, 10-year interest rates, which are probably the most watched terms in fixed income land. So tell us a little bit about what LPL's outlook is for interest rates over the next year and a half. And again, those two-year, 10-year treasuries.
Yeah, for sure. Certainly a lot of that is going to be dictated on what the Fed does this year. Our view is the Fed is going to start to cut rates in 2024, maybe not as much as markets are expecting. We think that the Federal Reserve can cut interest rates by about 1% this year, which would take the Fed funds rate down to, call it, 4.5% on the upper level. That's going to influence the 10-year Treasury yield and the 2-year Treasury yield, which, by the way, the markets are expecting at least 6 interest rate cuts by the Federal Reserve. The markets expect the Fed funds rate to be down closer to 3.75 to 4% over the course of next year, which we think is a little aggressive. That said, because of what's already priced into markets currently, we think the big move in 10-year Treasury yields has already taken place. So our view is that by the end of this year, we have a 3.75 to a 4.25 handle on the 10-year Treasury yield. We're around 4% now, so we don't expect the 10-year Treasury yield to move very much from current levels because of what's already priced into the markets. That said, the 2-year Treasury yield, which is more sensitive to the policy decisions by the Federal Reserve, it's kind of stuck at these levels because the Fed hasn't started to cut rates yet. We're around 4.30, 4.35 currently on the 2-year Treasury yield. We think that gets down to the 3.75 to 3.9% levels by year end. So whether we're right about the levels, you know, we're usually not. We do tend to get the direction correct. And our view is that we are going to start to see lower interest rates over the course of 2024.
So do you think that 2s to 10s, that's going to be a more normal curve or a flat curve going forward?
Yeah, that's a great point. Right now, 2-year Treasury yields are out-yielding 10-year Treasury yields, which is one of those reasons why we think that the 10-year Treasury yield is kind of stuck at these current levels, because it's not a normal dynamic to have your 2-year Treasury yield out-yielding a longer maturity security. So we do think there's going to be some normalization over 2024, maybe a little bit more flattish or perhaps even a little upward-sloping yield curve, which is the traditional shape of the interest rate yield curve.
All right, great. So we all kind of have an understanding that inflation plays a big role in where bond markets are going. So tell us a little bit about the inflationary risks in 2024. Like, which CPI categories are you keeping your eye on? Which one should consumers be looking towards in terms of getting some insights? I mean, we just had CPI come out today. It was a little hotter than expected. but it's something that comes out every month as an indicator with, you know, different components inside of it. So if you could just share with us, what are the key components, areas of inflation that we should be looking at? And with that, has the Fed been successful in controlling inflation?
Yeah. To your point, the December CPI report did come in a little hotter than expectations, as you mentioned. It has shown improvement over the peak inflationary levels that we've saw over the course of the last year. So we're making progress on the inflationary dynamics. We're not close. We're not back to that 2% target yet that the Fed is aiming for. The core number today came in at 3.9%. The Fed wants that closer to 2% before they start to declare victory. So the real risk in 2024, in our view, is that it's going to take longer to get back to that 2% target than markets were originally expected. Again, we're making progress on the inflationary front, but we're a long way from 2%. That said, our view is that by the end of this year, we're going to make still further progress into that inflationary front. We'll get closer to that 2% target, not all the way there, but we do think those inflationary dynamics continue to improve over the course of 2024. Categories that consumers should keep an eye on. If you think about the U.S. economy, it's broken out into a goods economy and a service economy. The inflationary pressures in the goods economy have collapsed. We're not really seeing a lot of these increased prices on the goods front. So whether that's from manufacturing, whether you're buying a refrigerator or a washer dryer, a lot of those prices have stopped increasing, which is good news. Where we are still seeing increased prices is on that service sector, transportation, healthcare. These service sectors continue to have increased price pressures more so than we saw pre-pandemic. So that's an area that we continue to look for. We need to see those service sector prices come down a little bit, and that's going to help the overall inflationary dynamics get back to that 2% target.
Interesting. I typically look at inflation in terms of energy, food, rents. Those are three that I look at most of the time, but your perspective is that goods inflation is going down and services is creeping up. How's that tie into those other three that I just mentioned?
For sure. Those are the ones that are most impactful for consumers. I think, you know, not to disparage economists or some of these metrics, but a lot of the things that we quote unquote exclude because they're volatile are the ones that are most directly impacting consumers. So energy, housing, rents, and food are all big components of that CPI metric. The energy component and the food component, however, get stripped out because they do tend to be more volatile than the other components. But the housing component continues to be a big driver of these elevated inflationary pressures. It's one of these things that may not directly impact a lot of consumers because a lot of consumers, they're stuck in a 30-year fixed mortgage. For example, the rent component of that CPI metric isn't going to directly impact homeowners that have a fixed mortgage rate. So it is something that we consider, but from our perspective and the Fed's perspective, to get back to that 2% target that we're trying to get back to, we do need to see a lot of these services. And housing is part of that services component. So as the housing market normalizes, as those rent prices maybe start to come down, well, we could get back to that 2% target.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So another question that I have is around, you know, whether or not a recession is on the horizon. Some folks in the forecasting world think that part of the reason that interest rates are going lower is because the economy is weakening. Do you think that the U.S. economy has a risk of recession, either the latter part of this year or next year, 2025?
Yeah, so this is the question that a lot of people have been getting wrong for a long time, right? So if you go back to October 2022, 100% of economists that were surveyed by Bloomberg, which is a news agency, said the economy would fall into a recession sometime in 2023. That obviously didn't happen. The consumer in aggregate is still in pretty good shape. Corporate America is still in pretty good shape. But to your question, we do think the economy is going to slow, not fall off a cliff, not experience any sort of recession that would resemble anything that we saw back in the global financial crisis or even COVID, for example. We do think that the economy is going to slow in 2024 because of still high interest rates and still high prices for a lot of these consumer price goods. We think it's a bridge too far for a lot of consumers. Our view is that the GDP this year is going to grow at a 1% clip. It's going to grow still, but below trend, we think. So we don't think it's going to be a scenario where there's going to be massive job layoffs or anything like that. We just think that the consumer could be close to being tapped out in terms of new spending. And we're starting to see some of these ancillary statistics start to flash warning signs. If you look at serious delinquencies for auto loans and for credit card loans, they are creeping higher, certainly below what we experienced back in the global financial crisis. But we are starting to see a lot of consumers retrench and start to struggle to pay a lot of their bills. So our view is that the economy is going to slow, but not fall off a cliff in 2024.
Okay, and for our listeners, how do you define a recession? Do you use the textbook definition or more of a rule of thumb? Help us understand, you know, when we hear the word recession in the news, how should we interpret that?
Yeah, so the recession call is arbitrated by a bunch of economists that look at a couple different things. There's the depth of the slowdown, there's the dispersion of economic slowdown, and there's the length of time of any sort of slowdown. It's one of those things that you could be in a recession, but this group of economists won't actually tell you you were in a recession generally until about 12 months after the fact. So it's very hard to define. It takes them a long time to define it. We don't use the kind of the rule of thumb of two consecutive negative growing quarters for GDP. We experienced that last year or 2022. There's a lot of parts of that GDP component that can be misleading, can be volatile. So we don't think we've been in a recession thus far, but there is the risk of potentially falling into one over the next 12 months. But again, we don't think it's going to be a deep, deep recession at all if it does in fact occur.
Okay, understood. Getting back to interest rates and the volatility that we've seen over the last 24 months, can consumers kind of take a breather? Can business decision makers relax a little bit with the idea that volatility is going to come down? Or will volatility stay high with this up and down kind of seesaw pattern we've been living through?
Personally, I hope that volatility is behind us. I have a lot more gray hair now than I did, I'll call it 2 years ago. But if you think about the reason why interest rates have been so volatile over the course of the last couple of years, it's because of the Federal Reserve and their aggressive rate hiking campaign to stave off these inflationary pressures. So there's been a lot of uncertainty as to when and how high the Fed funds rate would go. We've got a lot more clarity on that now. We think that the Fed is done raising rates. We think their next move is, in fact, a rate cut. So we do think the volatility we experienced over the last couple of years is behind us. That's not to say there won't be additional volatility as long as the Fed is involved in interest rate decisions, as long as inflation is still elevated. We don't think that the volatility we experienced the last couple of years will be repeated on a go-forward basis. But we do think that there's going to still be higher levels of volatility for corporate bond markets, for the consumer bond markets, as well as the government bond markets, just because of the fact that we're not back to where we need to be with inflation, with interest rates yet. So until we get back to a Fed funds rate that's more, kind of call it neutral, which is around 2.5-3%, and the inflationary picture has moderated and these inflationary statistics come in around 2%, there's going to be volatility. But we do think the worst is behind us. Now, that said, we also think that living through all that volatility, the fixed income markets, as we talked about earlier, have become a lot more attractive over the past couple of years. So if you think about where we were back in, call it 2010 to 2019 or so, interest rates were held at very low levels. Fixed income wasn't all that attractive because of just the low starting yield levels. But now, if you look at treasury yields, you look at core bond yields, we're seeing yields that we haven't seen since 2007. So there's definitely an attractive opportunity set, having lived through and passed through all that volatility that we experienced over the last couple of years.
Another question that I have is, as a fixed income analyst, what are the issues that you worry about most, like keeping you up at night? Is it, you know, some black swan that's out there? Is there something more specific?
I should preface this by saying, because I am a fixed income analyst, I'm afraid of everything. This is why we're not invited to a lot of parties, because we're always the glass half empty people. But as it relates to the fixed income markets, there's two things that kind of concern me on a go forward basis. The first is the inflationary dynamics that we talked about recently. If you look at history, now history doesn't always repeat, but sometimes it does rhyme. So generally speaking, inflationary surges tend to come in waves. If you look at the 70s, 80s in particular, there was a couple different surges of inflationary pressures. It's not our base case that we're going to see another surge of inflation, given the reasons why we had inflation to begin with. But there is that risk that inflation expectations become unanchored and we get a second round of these inflationary pressures. Obviously, that's bad news for fixed income investors. The other thing that concerns me is just the amount of treasury supply coming to market over the next couple of years. The U.S. government is expected to run deficits in the, call it, 6 to 10% of GDP range over the next couple of years. The Congressional Budget Office is saying the amount of treasury debt outstanding is going to increase by $10 to $12 trillion over the next decade. And I'm old enough to remember when $1 trillion was a lot of money, but apparently it's not anymore. So there's going to be a lot of treasury supply coming to market that needs to get digested by individual investors. At the same time, the Federal Reserve is trying to remove its footprint in the treasury market. So because of that supply-demand dynamic that may be offset in terms of treasury issuance, treasury purchases, that could keep interest rates higher than they otherwise would be.
Well, that's really interesting, actually, because, you know, with more supply, then prices go down, which means interest rates go up. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, very good. So that kind of wraps up our list of questions. But at the end of our episode, we always ask for our guests to, you know, share their best savvy advice with our listeners. And that could be financial markets related, personal experience, any words of wisdom that you'd like to pass on.
Well, I've got kids and they don't listen to my words of wisdom, so I'll share them with you. But there's two that come to mind just off the top of my head. Obviously, last year was a tough year. We lost one of the investing greats, Charlie Munger, who passed away last year. One of his sayings is something that we talk about in LPL research a lot, how patient investors are generally rewarded. I think his direct quote is something like, "The world is full of foolish gamblers and they will not do as well as the patient investors." We certainly believe that here in LPL research. There's a lot of noise out there. We try to concentrate on the signal, which tends to be more patient. The other thing I like to remind myself as I go through these markets, as I talk to clients and advisors, is that it's okay to be uncomfortable. In fact, you need to be comfortable being uncomfortable if you want to experience any sort of developmental growth. It's not always easy to be uncomfortable in a lot of these situations, but if you can get comfortable enough to be in these situations and then to, in fact, grow and develop, you know, you're certainly better off in the end. So those were the two things that kind of popped in my head as that question was being asked.
Well, I think that's really valuable advice, is being comfortable with uncomfortableness, so to speak, which is hard when we're investors and we're thinking about our families and our goals, but so important for success.
In these last couple of years, I mean, if you think about the equity markets back in 2022, certainly uncomfortable to be an equity investor. A lot of people thought 2023 was going to be another tough year. We disagreed and we thought that patience would allow us to take advantage of the great market that we experienced on the equity side. And again, it wasn't always comfortable, but it did work out in the end.
Well, terrific. Thank you very much, Lawrence, for these important, timely fixed income perspectives. Greatly appreciate that. Interest rates will continue to be a critical topic throughout 2024 and beyond, impacting portfolios, consumer decision-making, business concepts, and decision-making. So we really appreciate your perspective. We're always on the lookout for financial planning and investment ideas that can help our listeners become more savvy investors. If you are interested in learning more about income or growth investing, please do reach out to our team here at Alliant Retirement and Investment Services. You can find episodes of Invest Savvy on all major platforms, on our website also. Please follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn for new episodes, educational webinars, and articles. Just search for ARIS, A-R-I-S, Alliant, to like and follow. Our team is available to help you with your financial plan, so please do visit our website or contact your nearest financial consultant.
Thank you for listening to Invest Savvy, Advice You Need to Know. To learn more about our hosts, Kristen Chapluha and Tom Davia, and the team at Alliant Retirement and Investment Services, please visit our website at aris.alliantcreditunion.com. If you have questions for our hosts, you can submit them through our website or email investment-services@alliantcreditunion.com. Kristen Chapluha and Thomas Davia are registered representatives with, and securities and advisory services are offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer. Member FINRA SIPC. Insurance products are offered through LPL or its licensed affiliates. Alliant Credit Union and Alliant Retirement and Investment Services, ARIS, are not registered as a broker-dealer or investment advisor. advisor. Registered representatives of LPL offer products and services using ARIS and may also be employees of Alliant Credit Union. These products and services are being offered through LPL or its affiliates, which are separate entities from and not affiliates of Alliant Credit Union or ARIS. Securities and insurance offered through LPL or its affiliates are not insured by NCUA or any other government agency, not credit union guaranteed, not credit union deposits or obligations may lose value. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. No investment strategy can guarantee a profit or protect against loss. Neither LPL Financial nor its registered representatives offer tax or legal advice. Always consult a qualified tax advisor for information as to how taxes may affect your particular situation.